Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
I'm Johnny B. Good, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Sarah Dowdy.
And I'm Dublina Chakraborty.
And Dublina, I don't know if you've heard of Felicity Aston. I heard this dispatch from her on the radio the other week.
No, I haven't heard of her.
She's a polar explorer, a British woman who's trying to make a solo ski trek across Antarctica. And of course, being a modern day lady, she's got high tech equipment. For instance, she can tweet. I checked out her Twitter feed this morning, in fact, and there was an update from just a couple hours before. But still, she's out there in Antarctica all alone with more than 1,000 miles to ski. Certainly a physically difficult and a mentally challenging thing to do. So it kind of got me thinking. We've talked a lot about polar explorers on the podcast. People really seem to love episodes about polar explorers and their exploits. But the stories are usually pretty grim, as you'd imagine. They're punctuated by this glory above all attitude that a lot of times gets the explorers, or maybe even more often their crew, all of their men, killed at the end. And that's maybe why when I suggested today's topic to you as something for us to do a podcast on, polar explorer Fridtjof Nansen, you were hoping maybe there'd be an exhumation involved.
It did seem kind of promising.
An icy exhumation. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't blame you for thinking that. But the first thing that I think everybody needs to understand about Nansen is that he was a different breed of polar explorer. In fact, I almost think he has less in common with his contemporaries or the polar explorers who came before him, who were just sort of like, get out there, run over whatever you need to get there, bring lots of men. It doesn't matter if they die. Just achieve your goal. I think he has less in common with those guys than he does with modern Arctic adventurers. So people like Felicity Aston, who are just, you know, trying to inspire other people to achieve great things, or maybe more more likely, real scientists who are out there collecting real data.
Yes, so Nansen wasn't just out there for the recognition, and consequently he wasn't willing to throw his life away, although he did have some close calls, which we'll take a look at later. As a result, Nansen also had the odd distinction of being a polar explorer with a late life story that's really more impressive even than his youthful adventures. He became a diplomat, a humanitarian, a Nobel Peace Prize winner, and so it's a life that has earned us a two-part episode.
Yeah, with that kind of accomplishment, you're going to break it up into two episodes for us. So it all starts, though, on the skis. Fridtjof Nansen was born October 10th, 1861, near Kristiania, which is now Oslo in Norway. And at the time, I think it's kind of a developed suburban area now, but at the time it was pretty rural. There were woods that backed up to his family's property, a lot of countryside. And his father was a lawyer. His mother was an aristocratic athlete. And so he came from a comfortable background, but one that was still pretty rigorous, too. Both of his parents emphasized good morals and kind of a simple lifestyle, almost. They both had kids from earlier marriages, and everybody, all the kids, were encouraged to participate in sports, which were really getting a lot more popular at this time with the upper classes, especially winter sports in Norway. And all of that dovetailed, too, a bit with a nature craze, perfect place to grow up with these woods and countryside and opportunities to get out there and experience nature all around him.
And Nansen didn't just grow up playing one sport. He grew up swimming, tumbling, fishing, hiking, skating, and skiing. Ultimately, he got to a point where he could ski 50 miles a day with just his dog for company. So imagine skiing the distance of a marathon and then skiing back again.
And I mean, I haven't done it, but I've always heard that cross-country skiing is incredibly grueling, one of the highest calorie burning sports that's out there.
Yeah, I haven't done it either, but it looks tough. When it came time to choose a field of study, Nansen's father pushed him toward attending the Officers' Academy, figuring tuition was free and that the lifestyle would allow his son the chance to continue the outdoor pursuits that he loved so much. But Nansen's art teacher, on the other hand, pushed him to become a painter and a professional artist. But Nansen decided to go to university and study zoology instead. It was a profession that he hoped would allow him to get outdoors and sketch, so kind of the best of both worlds.
That's what he was hoping for. And he, being a smart kid, really might have easily just gone to university and continued in that scientific career, you know, maybe even done so quite successfully, had it not been for an offer that came up a year into college from one of his father's friends who was looking for a zoology student to join a whale and seal hunting expedition in the Arctic Ocean aboard a ship called the Viking, kind of like he wanted an intern aboard or something almost. So Nansen went on this 4.5-month-long trip and took the time to study everything he saw: animals, ice formations, currents, the northern lights. He'd take notes on it all. He would do sketches. He'd take photos constantly, really working quite diligently. So when he came home, he put it all together, wrote a book, and started dreaming of going back. That was the most important part of this expedition for him on the Viking, this Arctic bug that he caught.
He also got a really sweet job after that. And remember, he's still only 1 year into college at this point. His job was as the zoological curator at the Bergen Museum. Bergen was one of Norway's most cosmopolitan cities and had a strong scientific community. So Nansen got to work with Daniel C. Danielsen, an Arctic explorer from the 1870s, and his son-in-law, Dr. Gerhard Hansen, who discovered the leprosy bacillus. He also made jaunts to Germany and to Italy to work in some of the continent's top labs, and the only thing that he didn't like about this was the temperate winter. In 1884, he skied across Norway from Bergen to Kristiania in order to take part in a ski jumping cross-country competition.
I think that was his first major athletic accomplishment, or public athletic accomplishment.
Yeah, it got a lot of press,
right? Skiing across Norway, yes, it sounds like it would be a difficult thing to do. But all of this time, you know, ski jumping competitions aside, he was doing his research. And in 1888, he defended his dissertation on the central nervous nervous systems of certain lower vertebrates. And the really interesting thing about this, I mean, I think it was a well-received dissertation on its own, but what interests me about it is that he translated it himself. He spoke 5 different languages. He translated it into other languages and kind of abbreviated it too, made it more readable, sort of more, maybe more like the Scientific American version of his dissertation, so that it would get a wider readership and people could see what he was working on. And we've talked already about how great of an artist he was. He illustrated it himself with his own lithographs, and he used a device called a camera lucida to copy directly from the microscope to lithographical stone. So you can look up his dissertation online and see these illustrations, and they really do look like line drawings of what you would see under a microscope.
So he did a really great job with this, and after that, the job offers started rolling in, but Nansen turned them down. He had something else on his mind at the time, and that was polar exploration.
He had caught that bug. So years earlier, actually immediately after returning from the Viking expedition, Nansen had started thinking about maybe a trip to Greenland.
Yeah, and he decided to start with what he knew best, which was skiing. In the 1880s, the interior of Greenland was still unexplored, and many people even believed that it might be ice-free. Nansen, however, believed it was not only icy, but passable, and so he decided he'd ski from Greenland's remote east coast to its inhabited west. And this was just crazy. I mean, everyone thought that this was a crazy idea.
Yeah, I mean, crazy is the right word to describe it. That is what people thought, or suicidal, maybe, because skiing east to west meant there would be no retreat. You know, you couldn't decide a few days, a few weeks in to turn back and go back to the houses if winter was approaching too fast. You'd be stuck. And then also another thing that disturbed people was that there would be no base. And if you think about a lot of the polar exploration episodes we've talked about, there is usually a base, and they go on these little dashes from the base to try to reach their goal. The other thing that people were disturbed by was that he was planning on going with skis, so no sleds, no dogs, and that, of course, means that you can only bring what you can carry and still be able to ski across glaciers.
Yeah, his Nobel Prize biography describes it like this, quote, "In 1926, explaining his philosophy to the students at St. Andrews in his rectorial address, Nansen said that a line of retreat from a proposed action was a snare, and that one should burn his boats behind him so that there is no choice but to go forward."
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty: Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty: Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Ilya Kani, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow, thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app.
Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner.
Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So I've seen this covered a few different ways in different sources, kind of as a metaphoric thing, burning boats, burning bridges, or has he really burned his boat? So I am curious to learn any more about that, if anybody knows or has read more on Nansen and this boat burning potential. It seems like your line of retreat would already be removed, even if the boats were still there.
Right, so why take the time to burn the boats?
Why take them, unless you just wanted one last big warm bonfire. So consequently, because of the nature of this expedition, Nansen had trouble funding what seemed like suicide to a lot of people. He finally got a grant from a Danish politician and formed a 5-member team. There were 3 Norwegians and 2 Sami, and had a lot of trouble getting going on the mission to or on the expedition. There were many delays, and they couldn't even start ascending the Greenland Glacier until about mid-August 1888, by which point Arctic summer was kind of coming to an end, and one of the crucial things was to be able to make it across the glacier before winter set in.
So the party skied 9,000 feet above sea level in temperatures as low as negative 49 degrees Fahrenheit, with no choice but to just keep on going. They had brought along some pemmican, which, as I understand it, is kind of like the original power bar.
Portable food.
But the mixture didn't have enough fat in it, which was really, I mean, they were close to starvation, right?
Well, they were suffering a lot from that. And fortunately, though, they were able to have enough strength to keep going. And by late September, they reached the West Coast. And by early October, they got to a settled area.
Here, another happy accident happened for Nansen's life. The last boat had left 2 months earlier, so
It
sounds like a bad thing, but it did give him and the other explorers a chance to spend the winter with the local population. So Nansen took full advantage of this. He hunted, he sketched, he learned to kayak, he made friends. So when he came home to what was a hero's welcome, he had enough material for 2 books, the first, Crossing of Greenland, which was published in 1890, and Eskimo Life, which was published in 1891.
And that stint with the people there, learning how to kayak, learning how to survive in these temperatures, really did prove vital for his survival later on. And just kind of a side note, too, that I really like, in addition to providing a lot of new information about Greenland and its people and their customs, and just the Greenland topography, too, the trip was this huge PR campaign for skiing, which was, as we've mentioned, you know, something that was still kind of catching on, getting more popular. Kids started to form Nansen clubs where they would go out and ski and do outdoorsy kind of pursuits. And he was a really great ambassador for this. And I think this is maybe a good opportunity to talk a little bit about how he looked, too. Nansen is a popular suggestion, and I wonder how much of it has to do with the very impressive mustache he sported.
I know. I think Tycho would be jealous.
I think he would. Well, you were hoping for a mustache exhumation if we're going to really lay it all out there.
Yeah, if we're going to be honest, I wasn't just hoping for a regular exhumation. We were hoping for another mustache exhumation. But
really, like, go look him up, though. He's got a look of a polar explorer, and I think that it'll help, too, when
if Billy Idol were a polar explorer.
He does look a lot like Billy Idol with the mustache. But I think especially in the second episode where we talk about some of his diplomatic work, people talk about his presence, the presence he had and the confidence he had. And I think that that really comes across in pictures of him and will help all of that make sense.
So Nansen was the new hero, not only of skiing, but of exploration. And he spent the next 4 years writing and working as the curator of the Zootomical Institute of the University of Oslo. He also married Ava Sars, a singer, a daughter of a marine zoologist, and an avid outdoors woman.
You can find pictures of her, too, in a pretty awesome little ski costume. I mean, and by little, I do not mean little in any way. It's got a large skirt attached.
No, full coverage.
But by summer 1891, Nansen had that polar itch again. He started to plan another trip. And to understand his reasons for settling on this particular trip, we have to go back a little bit. Back in 1879, the American ship, the USS Jeannette, had gotten caught in ice north of Siberia. And that's pretty bad news, but the ship managed to hold together and drift along for about 21 months before finally succumbing to the pressure of the ice. From my understanding of how this happens, the ice, you know, forms around your boat, starts to cause immense pressure, eventually starts to break up the boat and pull it down. So that's what happened to the Jeannette, and half of the crew ultimately died trying to make a dash back to Siberia in 1881. 3 years later, though, remnants of the Jeannette washed up in Greenland, and it was a major discovery in that it proved the theory that currents went east to west over the Arctic.
So Nansen saw the news of the Jeannette and thought, hey, if I had a boat that didn't get crushed by the ice, I could ride that current and maybe go right over the North Pole.
Sounds kind of crazy again.
Yeah, sounds like part two to crazy idea land.
And it was a really bold idea, but it was one that wisely worked off of observation and careful planning rather than the previous model we've alluded to a little bit of Arctic assault, really. You know, you get out there with like 50 to 100 guys and just go with the techniques you know, don't adapt to the climate really, just bundle up and make a dash for it, a technique that obviously often ended in tragedy. There's a National Geographic article by Hampton Sides on Nansen's expedition, and it quotes a Nansen biographer named Roland Huntford as saying that it was very unusual for an explorer to, quote, take note of the forces of nature and try to work with them and not against them. So to pay attention to what way the currents were going, think that maybe you could let yourself be iced in and just literally go with the flow instead of just throwing everything you had at it.
It took some planning, though, to figure out exactly how to work with nature in this way. I mean, Nansen had to put a lot of time and thought into this. So the first step was the ship, of course. Nansen got together with the shipbuilder Colin Archer to design a vessel that wouldn't be crushed by the ice pack, one that would be pushed up instead of pulled down. He also decided that for the mission to work, it would have to be very small. So he started gathering supplies for 4 or 5 years for about a dozen men.
So a really innovative way of thinking about it.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app.
Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner. Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Elia Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every detail of spending years trapped in Arctic ice had to be considered very carefully, from the strength of the hull to the sanity of the men. The rudder and propeller, for example, could be pulled up as ice moved in. An insulation of reindeer hair, felt, cork, and tar kept things warmer inside. And a windmill powered electric lights that would keep the men in high spirits during those dark polar winters, allowing them to read from a 600-book library that had been collected, listen to an automatic organ, or chat in the saloon that was created on the vessel.
Which, you know, maybe that sounds frivolous, but if you're seriously planning to be in the ice for 4 or 5 years in the dark for much of that time, you know, you've got to take into account the
mental well-being.
Yeah, the spirit of the men. So Nansen's wife named the ship the Fram, which means forward, appropriately enough, and the expedition set off in June 1893 from Oslo, headed toward the New Siberian Islands. And by September, they did what they were hoping to do. The ship was frozen in. And you can imagine how harrowing that would be, waiting to see if it was going to work or whether your ship would actually sink. And here's how Nansen himself described it. He said, "A deafening noise began, and the whole ship shook. The noise steadily grows till it is like all the pipes of an organ." 2 days after that, he wrote that the ice is trying its very utmost to grind the Fram into powder.
But that construction worked. The ship held together, it didn't sink, and the Fram was able to ride the drift, and the crew did entertain themselves with scientific research and ski trips, and even a self-published newspaper, which sounds very interesting.
Big events of the day.
Yep. The drift, however, was unpredictable and really slow, so Nansen started to worry that they'd never be able to get far enough north to reach the pole, and that the whole thing might actually take something like 6 to 7 years instead of 4 to 5. So he had to make a major decision. He decided to take one comrade, a pack of dogs, and leave the relatively cushy, newspaper-filled Fram to make a dash for the pole. The only problem here, though, was that besides bad maps, killer temperatures, and slushy ice, there'd be no way that he could catch up with the Fram when he was done.
So the Fram, of course, would have drifted too far for him to make it back by then. So to go out on this dash to the pole, he would have to find the pole and then come back and then try to find solid land, civilization, or just be left out there on the ice to die. So that's where we're going to leave off. In the next episode, we have a polar bear attack, a Nobel Prize, and because we did mention that Nansen had a pretty impressive later career, too, saving an estimated 7 to 22 million Russians from starvation. And we do mean millions, so sometimes it's smart to be careful with your polar expedition planning because you have great things ahead of you.
Well, keeping with this exploration theme, we're now going to move on to listener mail.
So, Jablina, remember this summer when we got a lot of postcards from a girl who was taking a grand tour around Europe?
I do. That was a pretty good postcard collection we amassed there.
It was very impressive, and I liked how she would tell us what she was doing when she was writing the postcard, where she was sitting in these amazing cities.
Or which podcast she listened to in which city.
It was very fun. So I think we have a kind of part two of that from listener Hillary, who is sending us postcards while she's taking a violin tour. She's a violinist, and she's touring around Europe, maybe beyond. She was in Hanover, Germany when she sent us her first card. But I really like something she wrote. She said that, "I've been particularly enjoying the episodes about things that happened in the Civil War era, as my violin was made in 1864 in France. Hearing about that time is like finding out fascinating factoids about someone you know very well, because I spent a lot of time with this violin, and it definitely has a personality." So I thought that was such a neat commentary, because you obviously can't know a person who was born in 1864. I don't think there are any of them left. But you can be so familiar with an instrument. You know, as a professional violinist who spends much of her time with this thing from 1864 and feels a connection to that time, you know, a very mm-hmm. real connection.
And whoever played that violin before.
Well, and presumably all the people who've mm-hmm. played it before and the person who made it. And I just thought that was very neat. So Hillary has also sent us a couple postcards. One of them is from Palermo. I think that might be my favorite. It's the Church of the Martirana. And I think that while you're Googling pictures of Nansen and his wife and skis, you could go ahead and Google this church, too, because to me it almost looks like three scoops of pink sherbet on top. I mean, mm-hmm. I thought it was Photoshopped or something when I first looked at it, just because the color is so striking. She wrote to us, too, that she must have felt the same way. She said that it was so visually memorable that she had to send it instead of a more dignified one. She probably wrote that because the postcard does have again, sherbet-hued title above, mm-hmm. labeling it as Palermo. But anyway, Hillary, thank you so much for keeping us up with your travels, and good luck with all your performances.
And if you would like to send us some information about your own travels or history podcasts that have taken you places or ideas that you have for future podcasts, you can write us at historypodcast@howstuffworks.com, or you can look us up on Facebook or on Twitter at Mist in History.
And if you want to learn a little bit more about Nansen's favorite sport, we do have an article called How Cross-Country Skiing Works, and you can find it by searching on our homepage at www.howstuffworks.com.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes.
Coming back to Atlanta. Right now. Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.